And welcome to another installment of Mercenary Musings Radio, an exclusive audio service presenting views and insight from the mercenary geologist himself, Mickey Fulp, who just happens to be sitting on the other side of the table at a fine after-work Wet Your Whistle establishment in downtown Toronto. Mickey, how you doing?
I'm doing well, but the weather really sucks in Toronto, I have to tell you that, Rob.
Yeah, it sucks this time of year, but you know what? We're indoors. What brings you back to town, by the way?
I'm doing a resource estimate on a copper project I worked on for a number of years. So although now my business has moved to an analyst and newsletter writer, I really enjoy keeping my my mind into the geology game. So we're developing a new resource estimate for a very viable copper oxide project in Chile.
Okay, I'm sure subscribers to Mercenary Geologist will be watching for news on that as the weeks unfold. In the meantime, it's been about 3 weeks since we've had a conversation, a little bit longer than usual, but we decided to put things off because it's always great to get together with you, Mickey, face to face. I think we have a better conversation.
Absolutely.
You were in town also here in Toronto. You appeared on Business News Network, Canada's all business news television station. Among the topics, you touched on tungsten, and I think maybe this is a good time to maybe expand on some of the points that you brought out during that conversation. And whenever we do touch on one of these specialty metals, we often begin with a nice kind of a comprehensive overview from you, Mickey, you know, what the characteristics of the metal are. Where is that metal found? So give us a story on tungsten.
Tungsten is a very interesting metal. It was discovered in 1781, one of the first heavy metals discovered. It's number 74 on periodic table, which means it's heavy. It is steel gray. It has the highest melting point of any element in the periodic table other than carbon. So it's refractory, and it has a lot of uses because of its heavy metal, inert, corrosion-resistant, heat-resistant capabilities.
Okay, let's expand on those uses. Corrosive-resistant, it's a very tough metal. This is quite often used in cutting tools, drill bits, that kind of thing, where you have to go through other metals and materials which are very difficult to get through.
That's correct, Rob. Its first use was, and everybody probably knows this, was Thomas Edison's light bulb invention. It was a filament in light bulbs. It's still used for that, for the old style light bulbs, not the fluorescent bulbs that we have now for the most part, but it's used as steel and super alloys and less as chemical catalysts. But the main use of it is tungsten carbide as you cutting tools, as you alluded to, and then also used in heavy metal armaments, so armor piercing bullets, armor
for armored vehicles,
Steve, resistant tungsten clad steel tanks and munitions and things such as this.
Do you have any idea as to the market breakdown and the demand for the metal in terms of the material military applications, which you just outlined, versus the industrial applications? I mean, this sounds like a metal that can do well when the economy is doing well, and also a metal which can do okay when the economy maybe is not doing okay.
Well, it's somewhat economically resistant, and as you alluded to. So, interestingly enough, its use as an armament was a key part of World War II, and the fact that Portugal had the major reserves of and production of tungsten in the world. So Portugal became a very key part of World War II. It went to the Allied side, which led partially to the demise of Germany and the Axis powers in World War II, because they didn't have a source of tungsten to as armor-piercing or armor-protecting clad materials for their tanks.
So I did not know that. So we have, in part, Portugal's position on not delivering tungsten to the Germans in World War II is one reason for the victory.
And Portugal's still a major producer of tungsten to this day. So
okay. Portugal's a major producer, but the real dominant player on a global scale is China, which I believe controls maybe about 85% of the world's supply of tungsten. Is that correct?
Yeah, so what else is new, Rob?
Okay, but what type of problem does that present a problem to the world? Well, because you and I have talked about rare earth elements quite extensively. China controls the lion's share of rare earth elements. There's a movement afoot for China to perhaps limit how much rare earths we can get from that country, because it's got to look after its own domestic needs. So where does China fit in relation to tungsten in that sense?
Well, it's much the same story. And with tungsten, the same story goes back to the 1980s. In the 1980s, there were viable tungsten mines, late 1970s until about the mid-1980s, there were viable tungsten mines in North America, both in Canada and tungsten. Major, significant world-class tungsten mines. Now, you explore for tungsten, people probably don't understand this, but let's explain this a little bit.
Give us a first-hand account of things, because you are an explorer.
I explored for tungsten in the early 80s, and scheelite, which is one of the two major minerals, the other one being wolframite, scheelite fluoresces under a black light. But in natural light, it looks much like and is indistinguishable from feldspar, which is a major rock forming mineral. So since it fluoresces at light, you prospect for tungsten at night with a black light. So, and if you can imagine geologists wandering around the hills of Nevada, New Mexico, and the Yukon, the Northwest Territories, in rugged terrain oftentimes, armed with nothing but a black light to prospect for tungsten. Now, what you'll find is you have enough moonlight in a dry climate, a dry mountainous or desert climate, that you can actually maneuver around in the dark with the black light and natural moonlight to see from about a week before the full moon until about 4 or 5 days later. So you used to get geologists out lamping for tungsten at night.
Interesting. Great story. Now, what color is the tungsten when you're using this black light? What does the tungsten show up as?
The tungsten's kind of a very bright bluish-white mineral. If it has molybdenum in it, it ends up being kind of yellowish white. But to go on with your question, so China in the early 1980s came on with a bunch of low-cost mines, reduced the price, cratered the North American tungsten industry, and it has never recovered until recently. Now China has increasing domestic demand, so they are putting on export quotas. They're cutting their exports to the West. The price of tungsten's gone up 60% over the last 7 to 8 months, and so it's a good time to start looking at tungsten and tungsten plays.
Okay, now has that spurred on activity in North America to kind of re-kickstart the tungsten industry on this side of the world, if China is going to be holding on to more of its own?
Well, the prices have gone up, so 60%. So that's what's going to kickstart the North American effort. But the North American effort historically has gone in fits and starts. Kantung is now the biggest historic Canadian producer, is now back in production starting in October of 2010. Although, on the other hand, the Springer Mine and Mill Complex in Nevada has not come back on and has continued to struggle with the idea that it can become a producer and of tungsten again. So,
is this a pure play metal, Mickey, from an investing standpoint, or is tungsten kind of a byproduct of something that's bigger?
Well, it can be a byproduct of moly, tungsten, porphyries, but if an investor, a speculator, wants to get involved with the tungsten business, I would very much suggest that you pick a standalone tungsten project, and there's plenty of those. They are well known. They have produced significantly in the past in North America, and they have because they're relatively small deposits, these standalone, they're called tungsten skarns, and they occur in unique geologic environments. They are relatively low capex, so as opposed to getting involved with a mega project like a moly tungsten porphyry, which most juniors could not handle the capex of that, I think you want to pick juniors that are looking for standalone tungsten projects.
Okay, and what are the investing prospects like right now from the activity that you see right among those companies that you just mentioned? Is this a good time to get into the market from an investing in tungsten point of view, or would you hold back or what?
Well, tungsten companies have, of course, gone up with the recent rise in tungsten prices. So I'm having a very hard time right now finding a pure tungsten play of interest. So
they're looking fully valued at this level?
To me, they are right now. Mm-hmm. But it's an interesting sector. You might want to try to take a look at some startup tungsten companies, perhaps, as a place to invest. But nothing that's on the board right now really floats my boat, I would say.
Okay, good way to wrap this up. Next time out, Mickey, what do you want to talk about?
We're going to talk about thorium, which is a metal with no use, but with a very possible and robust future use. And that will come from New York at the beginning of a
long journey for you.
Of a 5-week road trip. It's going to take me to 8 countries and over the course of 5 weeks. So,
okay, and we will include a future Mercenary Musings radio show from one of those stops along the way.
It most definitely will, Rob.
Okay, thanks very much, Mickey.
Always a pleasure, Rob.
That is Mickey Fult, the Mercenary Geologist. You can find him on the web at mercenarygeologist.com. I'm Robert Graham at Mercenary Musings Radio. Thanks for listening.